Welcome to The Overview, overthinkingit.com, subjecting movies to a level of scrutiny they probably don't deserve, live. I am Matt Rather, editor-in-chief of Overthinking It, and your host for this episode, our first of The Overview, and I am here with two of our writers, Matthew Belinke. Hi, Matt.
Hey, everybody.
And John Parrish. Hi, John.
What up?
We are gathered here today to watch the film Twilight, based on the Stephanie Meyer book of the same name, the phenomenon teen vampire film. And so before we get started, let's just establish who has done what with this movie before. Belinke, have you seen this movie before?
I have not seen the movie. I have not read the book. But I'm actually excited to do it. I think this is a level of scrutiny it does deserve. This is a really... Because the thing is that when a movie is very popular and it's a good movie, there's nothing, you know, there's nothing surprising about that. Like, Harry Potter, I think, deserves its popularity. But Twilight has... I'm looking at Rotten Tomatoes now. It's at an even 50%, which is, like, okay. But New Moon has a much lower percentage and is even more popular. So there's something about the series that's very critic-proof. And so I think that, like, that, makes it worthy of scrutiny.
Yeah. Well, the phenomenon worthy of scrutiny, if not the literary work itself. Is that the distinction you're trying to make?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, what I'm watching, I'm going to try to figure out, if I were a 14-year-old girl, what would make me swoon and type all manner of emoticon in my sidekick? Is sidekick what I would have?
You're a teenage girl. Don't they all have iPhones? Or no, the kids don't like the iPhones because they don't have real keyboards and the kids need keyboards for the sexting or something. I don't know. John Parrish, have you seen this film?
Yes, I watched the movie once recently just as a prelude and a note-taking experience to get some notes on the film. I have not read any of the books, though.
Okay. So you are you're coming in. It's good. It's good that at least one of us has done some
preliminary research.
Yeah, some preparation for this. Now let me explain what we're going to do here today. Well, it's day for us. It may be the middle of the night, vampire time, when you are watching Twilight. We're not here to make jokes. This is not like Mystery Science Theater 3000 or the Riff Tracks series of audio recordings, downloadable audio recordings. Fantastic though they are, we are trying to do something else. What we're trying to do is a little more in line with the mission of our site, to subject popular culture to a level of scrutiny that it probably doesn't deserve.
Probably doesn't deserve. I'm sorry.
That's just reflex.
So you, what we're going to do is a commentary track. As we watch the movie live, we're going to have a conversation about it and, record our thoughts for you so that you can... listen to them while you are watching the movie. So in a minute, when we begin, we're going to give you a 3-2-1 go, and we'll all hit play at the same time because we're recording this in three different locations around the United States. And then we'll just watch and see what conversation emerges and fill in background details and analysis along the lines of what you're used to on overthinkingit.com. And hopefully it will be... entertaining and informative for you. A note about how to view this. If you're on your computer watching the DVD or a downloaded file like on iTunes, you'll want to have two players open, one for the audio and one for the video. Or if you're on the DVD, what you'll want to do is get queued up. Well, I guess this applies to the downloadable file also. Get queued up to right before the Summit Pictures logo, where the light is cresting over the mountains.
As soon as it starts appearing, as soon as you see the logo start fading up, hit pause and wait for our 3-2-1 go.
Exactly. Now, wait, Matt, is that 3-2-1 go on one, or is it 3-2-1? And then we go on go.
I think we should go on. Instead of saying go, we should say something more Twilight-y.
All right.
Like we should say like Edward or Bella. I guess Edward
or Sparkle.
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 3, 2, 1, Sparkle. It is.
And I'm going to, you guys won't see this, but I'm going to do jazz hands when we say Sparkle.
All right.
And Spirit Fingers. I can actually, not everyone can do this. I can do jazz hands and Spirit Fingers at the same time.
That's, well, yeah, that's a gene, though, that you're either born with or not. Like,
I'm being, still proud of it, okay?
Like being a super taster. All right. So everyone, itchy trigger fingers right over the play button. On the logo, if you're on a computer, make sure it's the front window in your computer so that you do it right when we say to. And hit play. You know you hit play on the S word. Here we all go. 3, 2, 1. Sparkle.
Sparkle.
You know, you guys probably shouldn't have said that because there's a delay with the sound going across the country.
This is a nice understated logo, by the way. I don't like the logo cards that almost seem like they could be part of the movie.
Yeah.
Now that they're so dramatic. Ooh.
It's a nature documentary.
Yeah, it's like Pandora.
It's a noble sentiment.
Wait, is this narrated from the perspective of a deer?
Yes, the female voice is the voice of the deer. Except the POV shot is not the POV shot of the deer.
Now, rather, having read the book, I have to ask, does the novel also begin with this narration?
You know, I don't recall. I'm going to have to get the book. Uh-oh, who was that? Who was that catching the deer? Did the deer turn into this girl? So this film involves a girl moving from Phoenix to gloomy Washington. And, you know, I wonder if Phoenix was really the best choice for, like, the beautiful home that she misses, like the middle of the American desert. It's not like,
isn't Phoenix like the fastest growing city in America or something?
Yeah, the Phoenix Mesa area, bunch of like exurbs, and you know, I mean, look.
I believe
it.
Every 10 years, Phoenix is ritualistically burned to the ground and rebuilt. So it's probably as good a time as any to leave for ooh.
But yeah, some place like Orange.
Twilight type treatment, by the way.
But yeah, to your point about Phoenix, some place like Orange County, California, might have been a little more suburban.
And then she can learn karate as long as she's moving there.
You know, this mustachioed police officer reminds me of the mustachioed police officer in the Sarah Silverman program.
Yeah, there is something a little bit arch about having, like, your police officer have a mustache that, like, you know, it's sort of a little bit of a wink at an audience. So this is her dad?
Yep, this is dad.
In real life, he's probably, like, 6 years older than her.
Yeah. Who's almost comically inept at parenting.
What's up with his song, by the way?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's obviously a recent song, but it sounds very much like a, you know, Mamas and the Papas or Birds era sort of folk throwback.
It's like Up With People.
It's not seriously Up With People, is it?
So why is she leaving her mom to live with her dad and his dad?
Because her mom's new husband is a, I don't know if they sufficiently explain this, is a minor league baseball player.
Okay.
So he's traveling the country, she's traveling with him, and the girl thought, you know, rather than travel with them, I'll go live with my dad.
So everything in Seattle is going to be a little green, right?
Well, it's not Seattle, it's the tiny town of Forks.
I don't know. Where is that in relation to Seattle? Does anyone know?
Yes, the novel does begin like that. with the same narration as a preface.
Oh, okay.
But the narration in the novel is not just kind of disconnected. It's a scene that's coming much later in the film. This is teen heartthrob Taylor Lautner.
Wait, this is the guy from the second movie? Just with more hair?
Yep. Just what every girl wants, a truck.
Yeah, this girl's a country music song waiting to happen.
She doesn't know how to drive a standard.
Do you?
Now that's... See, that's an interesting bit that I think the movie could have touched on more, but doesn't. That, you know, the whole reservation politics thing, like the black family, they're obviously of American Indian descent, and they live on a reservation. And spoiler alert, although if you've seen the trailers for the second movie, you know this, the blacks are actually werewolves. Mm. And then we're about to, in a few minutes, meet the Cullen family, who are very, bourgeoisie, blindingly white, upper-class family, and they're, as we're about to discover, vampires.
Well, they're sort of not bourgeoisie, right? Like, they're definitely upper-class.
Right, I'm sorry, I meant upper-class, although...
The idea being that vampires are, like, often associated with an idea of, like, a kind of decayed European nobility.
Right.
Eastern European nobility that is sort of irresistibly interesting, but also kind of decrepit, moss
covered. Right, right. I think the critical thing about Gothic literature is that, like, there has to be a castle, but it has to be a crumbling castle. It has to be like, the fall of the House of Usher, where you're living in this place where your ancestors have lived, but you've been declining from generation to generation. And there's something sort of like horrible about being like, the last of your line or something. So that, if you live in a nice castle, you're not really a vampire.
But anyhow, that leads me to the question, and rather, if you've read more of the books than I have, I don't know if you'll know the answer, but do they play with this more in the later novels or the later movies, this contrast between the aristocratic vampires and the rural, sort of kicked off their land werewolves? Because,
yes.
Okay, good.
And it's, it's a... Oh, wow, this is Anna Kendrick, Academy Award nominee, isn't she?
For what?
Up in the Air.
Oh. Huh.
She's the girl in Up in the Air. I forget. She was nominated for a lot of awards. I forget if the Oscar was one of them. Oh, I have an age difference update. Billy Burke, who plays her father, is actually 24 years older than Kristen Stewart.
Wow. All right. Well, I apologize to the makers of Twilight. It's interesting that Underworld, which is obviously a very differently toned vampire series, more for boys, has the same sort of dynamic where the vampires are this sort of aristocracy, these very almost effete European types, and the werewolves are these, like gypsy underclass that are, actually enslaved and pushed around by the vampires and then rebel.
Well, it's because they're more animalistic, They seem They seem less like the apotheosis of man and more like man, descended into the muck. Uh-oh, who's that?
So one thing we've sort of talked over here, and I hate to bring it in right as the Collins being introduced, but is the splash that Bella has made on literally her first 3 hours in school. Like, we've already seen several boys fighting over her and several girls laughing at everything she says. That's sort of a very odd dynamic for the new girl in school. It's atypical in new girl in school cinema or literature.
Do you think it's to do with how isolated the do you think it speaks to how isolated and sort of dull life in Forks, Washington is?
Like she's the most exciting thing to happen in town for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
Because she's from Phoenix.
Well, that's why, like, why wouldn't she make it Hollywood or something? Not just because I'm from L.A., but because, like, that's, you know, or New York City, right? Like, the places with the kind of sophisticated romance about them.
Muted hush. Here's Edward.
Obviously. Do you think the vampires enjoy going to high school, or do you think it's, like, a necessary chore for them?
It's a necessary chore for them, and this is something that they go into in the books a little more, where that, like, it would be quite odd to have these 17-year-old-looking people at school in the town if they didn't go to school.
Right. But, I mean, how many times have they read To Kill a Mockingbird at this point?
This is, again, well, this scene kind of speaks to that. Uh-oh. Her scent is being blown at him.
Well, I like that. So this must be really terrible for him. It's not just that he has to go to high school for all eternity, but he has to go to high school with, like, really nice steak that he can never eat for all eternity.
Yeah.
Now I know we're not explicitly supposed to be critical of the movie, but this is one filmmaking choice that I found particularly odd. It's that we've had a lot of her voiceover narration throughout the movie, sort of explaining the obvious, but this is one scene that I don't think is shot really well. It's not eminently clear to me how they're meant to be reacting toward each other, and a little bit of narration on her part would have helped there. It would be nice to know what she's thinking here. But we get, like, a bunch of lip bites, which works just as well.
You don't read that on her extremely busy facial expression?
I get that she's thinking about things.
The more is more school of film acting.
He doesn't look a lot like Sam.
I don't get that. Kids love those little bottles.
Did he, like, give her, like, a shot of Jaeger for Christmas? Huh.
Now, the Barry Cobbler she's just mentioned has actually become a very popular item in the tourist industry of Forks, where this diner actually is. And apparently it's the best thing that ever happened to this tiny little town in Washington, because they have this influx of twihards, as they call themselves.
Do you know if Stephanie Meyer had ever actually been to this town before she wrote the book? Or did she just pull out an atlas and pick a town at random?
Maybe Wikipedia would know.
Why is her reaction to that, uh-oh? Like, the kids are all literally very welcoming, with the exception of the Cullen family, obviously.
Yeah, this mother-daughter bond. Why is her mom calling her from, like, a garage? They explain that, right?
Well, not really. It's because, you know, they're always traveling.
By the way, I like how everything in the movie is sort of blue or green, but her truck is bright red, her backpack is orange. You know, she's like the splash of color in this town. Well, except for that, you know, convertible, which I assume has another sort of, like, the production design is very sort of like, pay attention to this.
Yeah, here's the thing to look at.
Yeah.
She's an
Bella,
orange background.
Bella, hey, come hang out with us. We're trying to be friendly with you. No.
They're awfully Bella, friendly.
Bella, hey. Whoa. Meanwhile, in another movie.
Yeah, exactly. Though it's still blue. We're still in the same movie. It's still excessively blue. You know, they gave all the bad vampires long hair, which you saw as they jumped over in that shot. Now, there's a shot I don't understand. Why make the, you know, why make the Valve the hero of your shot with the brutal killing, you know, in deep focus, out of focus in the background?
Yeah, the cinematography in this film, by and large, is a little questionable.
At the time, I compared it with the way a...
She's clumsy.
Yeah.
That's what makes you a three-dimensional character right there. To answer your question about the Valve, this movie is all about pressure and the release of pressure and the containment of pressure.
When it came out, I compared this film to a History Channel reenactment or like a Nature Channel reenactment of like, you know, Wolves in the Forest and things like this. And I think that the production value is at about that level. Though I haven't seen the second one, but apparently they you know, dumped a little more money into it.
I have to say, from an acting standpoint, that was a well-handled pratfall of Kristen What's-Her-Name's there. Because it's not easy to take a fall like that on concrete over ice and make it look legitimate without hurting yourself.
Yeah. I wonder if she had the butt pad in. Yeah, girl.
Thankfully, Bella was safe from the conflict of having to choose between two interesting guys.
Right, between an Asian character who talks like a black guy and a white character who talks like a black guy.
Yeah, and like typical girl fashion, she only seems interested in the one guy who doesn't want anything to do with her. What is she staring at?
Yeah, the eyeline match was not...
Yeah, she was looking, like, down off frame. All right. The golden eye... This is like Hogwarts. There's, like, whimsical prizes for doing well in school.
She said that to him as though, like, he owes her an explanation. And he was sort of dickish, I agree. But, you know.
She acts as if they're already married.
Stephanie Meyer was born in Hartford, Connecticut.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
West Hartford. That's why I said, oh, no way.
Born the day before Christmas, 1973.
So all her birthdays are lame because she only gets like one set of presents.
Yeah. Vampires are cold.
It's rough and coarse. Gets everywhere.
So much of the acting in this scene is communicated through sub-vocalizations, like nervous laughs, sighs, catching one's breath, umming or ahing.
When are we going to get the reverse shot of the onion cells, you know, in the process
you really,
of meiosis?
You really want to see mitosis, don't you? Oh, sorry, meiosis?
Well, no, I guess it's mitosis.
See, there's one.
I have to say, he seems very relaxed in the scene compared with, like, his extreme reaction the first time she walked in the room.
Yeah, but look at these eyes. Look at those eyes. That's the key to that.
Is that unusual for him?
No, I'll just give it away. I mean, the eyes are golden when he's drank blood recently. They'd be red if it were human blood, but the Cullens are unique in that they only feed on animals.
So they're sort of vegetarians?
Yeah.
This is the problem with a walk and talk down a hallway where two characters are walking abreast, right? Where do you look, you know? Like, because he's been kind of, you know, one quarter into her and sidestepping the whole way, and it just, it looks awkward to me.
Yeah, the West Wing makes it work, though. How could she possibly remember that?
You never forget your first vision of the person with whom you are destined to spend all eternity. Oh, and off he goes.
And note, as a little throwaway, which we only saw a glimpse of in that scene, they won the Golden Onion. She was carrying it back to the locker.
Huh. Oh.
They identified mitosis faster than anybody.
Well,
I really hope that, like, in the fourth book, the Golden Onion turns out to be the key to the future of humanity.
It doesn't. Oh, see, she's got it in her hand there, in her left hand.
And now it's gone. Continuity of onion, please. Uh-oh.
Whoa. What just happened? Well, why was that car barreling through the parking lot at 50 miles an hour?
Well, I think they were going too fast and they slipped on some ice or something.
Which happens in...
It does.
Not Seattle. Like that. He's gone.
I hate to inject some necessary physics into, you know, this commentary here, but if someone had the strength to displace a van while it was barreling towards someone, wouldn't his hand punch through it rather than just dent the door?
It depends it depends on the surface area of his hand, I guess.
But I mean, he's got enough. He's apparently got enough mass to. Oh, hang on. Never mind. It's Dr. Party Boy. He seriously looks like he just stepped out of the dancer cage at Studio 54 or something.
Yeah.
It's a shame Fenzel's not here. This was the guy from Fastlane.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, Dr. Cullen. Yeah.
The McGee show?
He looks a little like Noah Wiley from the early days of ER, you know?
That's probably what they were going for.
By the way, Parrish, I'm still thinking about the stopping the car with the hand thing. I mean, he'd have to either weigh a lot or he'd have to have very good sneakers to create enough friction with the ground. To do that, you know, or else I don't care how strong he is, he would just be pushed by the freaking car.
Right, because it's not just a question of strength, it's a question of pure force.
Yeah.
Like, and so he has zero movement, so everything else has to be in terms of force, whereas the car has a lot of momentum behind it.
You know, Edward's haircut looks like the situation from Jersey Shore.
You mean the situation's haircut looks like Edward Cullen, you mean?
I guess so. Maybe that was its inspiration.
Are we going to see Edward's abs at some point in this movie so we can really compare them?
We actually... I hold that thought, Matt.
Oh, I'm going to hold it close to my bosom.
in contravention of the laws of physics.
I don't really like that coincidence, by the way, that she just happened to need her life saved, you know, like a week after showing up at the school. Somebody once told me that you can tell if a plot is good by how many coincidences you need to make it work. You know, that, like, a little bit of coincidence is fine, but if the only way your plot can work is by, like, putting a speeding car, you know, right at a woman that he's just fallen in love with, then it's like you need to come up with a cleverer way for these revelations to come out.
Speaking of cinematography, they set up that interesting shot where the two of them were on opposite ends of a hallway corner, so there was, like, a nice little visual divide between them, and then they made it all really tight one-shots throughout, kind of defeating the purpose. Again, I don't like this movie's cinematography. Oh, and also that just happened.
But did you see that bosom heave?
We're getting a little more voiceover.
I'm going to say, given that I think it was at this point illegal in the eyes of the law for me to have noticed that bosom heave, no, I didn't.
Yeah. I do like your bright red car.
Funny little reference there to Frankenstein. Kind of activating a connection to the horror genre in general.
Frankenstein, of course, being the one monster that doesn't actually live in Forks, or so we think.
For now.
Is she supposed to be far more attractive than all the other girls at the school?
Yes. I think she's, like, supernaturally attractive in some way.
Come on.
Yo, yo, yo.
I'm the cool teacher.
I don't buy the urban slang up here.
I give people golden onions. Hey.
Yeah.
Ooh, compost is cool. Yucky.
Are they going on a field trip to a greenhouse?
Now, you'd think there's some symbolism here, like with the obsession on recycling and about the cycle of life and death, but there really isn't, considering that the chief relationship of this movie is a creepy, paralyzing eternity. You can Google it.
Actually, Google plays a role in this film later on.
It does, yeah.
See, she's clumsy. Actually, in the books, a great deal is made of her clumsiness. And it can kind of be more thoroughgoing, so it seems less like a gimmick.
I think the clumsiness is key, because it sort of brings her down to earth, makes her more identifiable. You know, she's not just like a hot girl. She's like a hot girl who, like, can't walk down her driveway without taking a pratfall.
Look at that peacoat sway in the breeze.
Like, no, they're walking away from all the interesting characters.
He's like a Banana Republic ad.
Aha, you implicitly admit to having saved me.
Couldn't he lie and just say he was 22 and then not have to go to high school for all eternity?
A very young-looking
Yeah, the blue cast over everything is a little, I don't know, a little tiring, I guess.
I don't know, a lot of people do. James Cameron does that obsessively.
Yeah, but in James Cameron, there's a like a green world that it's contrasted with, you know, in Avatar, not in Avatar, right?
Yeah, if you watch Terminator 2, it's either like all orange or all blue. Yeah, I know. It's, well, I just figure that's how Seattle kind of looks. I know it's not Seattle, but it is. Everyone's way too friendly. Stephanie Meyer ever go to high school?
Was that a stunt apple kicker, or do you think he practiced that himself?
There's like some CGI artist that had to spend like 2 weeks making the apple fly in just the right way. Just hypothetically.
Huh. So, Forks is about 100 miles, 80 miles from Seattle. Actually, closer to Vancouver.
Interesting.
No, about equally as close to Vancouver, I guess.
Do you think the Cullens are enjoying the Olympics right now?
Do you think the Cullens compete in the Olympics?
Yeah, Lindsey Vonn is awfully pale.
If there's some sort of deer hunting sport in the Olympics, then yeah, I'd say they're pretty competitive.
Probably shouldn't make topical references because we want these to last for a while.
Yeah, the Olympics is going on right now, people.
The 2010 Winter Olympics, Vancouver.
Yeah. Greetings from the past.
This John actually is the it wasn't referred to, but this is the like ancient detente between the Indian werewolves of Lapush and the vampire Cullens, who are allowed to continue living in Forks in exchange for only eating animals.
Yeah, they make oblique reference to it later in this scene. But again, it's a point that's sort of glossed over here. They mention in the cafeteria that, you know, the push, it's this beach down on the res, namely the Coyote Indian Reservation, where we kicked the Indians after taking them off their land a couple hundred years ago. And speaking of, here they are.
Oh, yeah. Hey.
The very long-haired Indians. You're on my res. Yo.
Yeah, I was going to say, these Indians are awfully cool with white people coming and going on the land that they were forced to occupy at will and then not letting them back into polite society.
Oh, no, it's the sound cue of ominousness.
I hope there's like a sign on the beach that says no Cullens allowed.
Yeah.
I love that line. You caught that, huh? You caught that. You caught that extremely obvious and plotting
that thing
bit
that
of
we
overacting.
Said right in front of you. You heard that.
Yeah.
You are special. So that's Shark Boy, right? You know, Shark Boy?
What?
Huh?
From the Adventures of Shark Boy and Lava Girl? No? Forget it.
No, it's kind of odd how, you know, Taylor Lautner turns into this international sex symbol as of the second movie, but in this first movie he's so buttoned up, like he's got long hair obscuring his face, he's always completely wrapped up in jackets or like weird floppy shirts, he spends most of the next movie just like shirtless all the time and with his hair cut short.
What's going on with these sepia tone flashbacks?
Yeah, no, these flashbacks are what specifically made me think of, like, a History Channel reenactment
yeah.
or something. Like,
remember, like, was Jesse James left-handed? By the way, I just want to throw out, I dated somebody who played Mrs. John Adams in one of those. She got to, like, write a letter with a quill.
In a History Channel reenactment?
Yeah, what is it, like, Abigail Adams? Whatever. Yeah. I just like to mention
that. There are people, they're actually, honest to God, people in the ocean. That must have been a terrible, terrible thing to do for hours and hours.
Well, they had skin suits. I know people who surfed as recently as a month ago. This is that guy who was the creepy Santa earlier, and I think the only reason he was introduced earlier was so that we would take note when he, spoiler alert, gets killed. Kind of clumsily done, because they didn't establish a lot of sympathy for him then, and so I have no real reason to mourn his passing now.
Yeah, all we know is that he likes to give alcohol to children.
Yeah.
Whoa. That was an extra special effect.
Yeah.
There's special effects in the way that the Special Olympics are special.
Tori Amos wants your blood.
This is the girl who got herself fired from this franchise.
Did she? Because isn't her character sort of central to, I think, the third book in the series?
Yeah, and whereas this is an actress named Rachel LaFay, it will be Bryce Dallas Howard in the second movie. Well, it was Bryce Dallas Howard in the second movie and in subsequent movies.
Oh.
Because she booked another job that conflicted with shooting the second movie, with her agent, like, I think telling her that, like, it's okay, they'll schedule around you. And they were like, no, we're going to fire you and get a different actress. That was the Google scene.
Yeah, there was some very detailed navigating, like, search this, click on this.
Ooh, it's the first sunny day in a while.
That's weird. That was the most half-hearted hug.
Again, she's holding an apple. Wait, if I say mind if I come and you say yeah, that means you do mind if I come and I shouldn't come.
It's convenient that we established literally 30 seconds ago that she needs to go to Port Angeles to get this book.
Wait, why does she need to go to Port Angeles? Because there's a book there?
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Note the street toughs outside.
Is there no interlibrary loan system in Washington State?
The street toughs of Port Angeles.
Yeah, seedy, you know, middle Washington State town.
By the way, that sounds like the worst Martin Scorsese movie ever, The Street Toughs of Port Angeles.
They haunt the Victorian houses. They walk up and down the manicured streets.
Dare you go antiquing.
Exchange of money for goods and services. We've established she has a book.
What do you think, just based on that shot, what do you think that guy's ethnic descent is?
I don't know. Like, if there are only more context clues around that bookstore, like weird wood carvings.
No dream catchers were harmed in the filming of this movie. You have to go down a dark alley to get to the bookstore?
Yeah, no, I'll just go back up this narrow, dark passage, because no one will head me off.
Blinky, you might want to avert your eyes. Here comes another one of those coincidences you're going to hate so much.
Wow. No more first-person shots. Is he just following her around in case she is about to get killed?
Spoiler alert, yes.
Okay. Well, that's not a coincidence then. That's just, you know, meh.
That's just plot that we don't know yet.
Yeah. It'd be a coincidence if he was just there because he was buying a rare book about something random.
Nice Volvo stunt driving.
Is that not really driving?
Not really a car that you expect to be driven like that.
Well, it is a very. If you're like more than 100 years old, you don't want to die in a car accident. That's just sloppy. So you want a very safe car.
Yeah, and I think that's the most interesting supernatural power he's displayed so far. Like his precision driving, because that pulling off a bootlegger turn like that's not easy.
He has a. He's definitely been to the Bob Bondurant vampire driving school.
So this movie has a pretty extreme ghost ship moment, of course. For those of you who are not regular readers of the blog, the ghost ship moment is that when the thing that we know, because we know what the movie is about, becomes finally obvious to the main character. So we know that Edward is a vampire, and when Bella finds out that he's a vampire, that's the ghost ship moment, and we haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah.
Now, does it have to be in the title, or is it just generalized information that we know because we've seen the trailer?
See, I'd say it's hard to imagine that there's anyone in America who went to see Twilight and didn't know that there were vampires involved.
Well, I'm sure some poor teenage girl dragged her grandmother and grandfather along because they were the only ones she could get. And something I want to comment on here, you know, in the first diner scene, Bella had a veggie burger, and now she's having mushroom ravioli. It's very, very sort of genteel urban, you know, cuisine here. It's not like you'd expect in small town America, nothing but burgers and fries, steak and potatoes, the occasional salad, etc.
Yeah, but anywhere that has a Costco has veggie burgers, you know?
Yeah, but not every place has
along with, like, we saw the recycling scene earlier. There's sort of this feeling that, like, this is a community that's, like, very, it's like a honorary suburb of San Francisco.
Which is of a piece with its you know, placement in the Pacific Northwest, where they're pretty environmentally savvy. But even though they eat animals, the Cullens refer to themselves as vegetarians because they don't eat people. And so I think that, like, a parallel is being set up between the two.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, we haven't seen her eat meat yet. She eats a lot of apples and veggie burgers and ravioli.
Well, they're chaste until they're married, so she doesn't eat meat till the fourth book. Hey, yo!
Yeah.
This is an interesting superpower that she has that is not really capitalized on until the fourth book.
Straw poll of the.
Oh, sorry, you go first.
Okay, straw poll of the commentators here, based on just that scene alone. Who do we think is the better actor of the two?
I think that Robert Pattinson is more of a movie star. That, like, he has more charisma. Okay. I don't think either of them are going to win an Academy Award, but I don't know. I wouldn't have predicted that.
Well, not for this movie, no.
Yeah, not for this movie. I mean, they're probably both very good. Otherwise, they wouldn't have gotten this opportunity.
Right.
I tend to feel that, like, even the people we think of bad actors are probably in the 99th percentile, or else they wouldn't have gotten that opportunity to be seen as bad actors. You know what sort of jumped out at me is that Kristen Stewart, or is it Kirsten Stewart? Kristen? She's not the most attractive actress in Hollywood. That, like, she's not unattractive, but I don't think she's, like, a stunning beauty. And I think it's interesting that, like, they could have picked somebody who was just, like, you know, incredibly hot. And I think they picked somebody who was, like, sort of cute and beautiful, but not, like, a pinup girl hot, you know?
I imagine what they were going for is the sort of girl-next-door look that the target audience could easily envision themselves as. Because, you know, she's attractive. There's no question about that. But it's not a sort of inaccessible, perfect DNA attractiveness.
She's not attractive in the way that he's attractive.
Yes. Yeah,
he's supermodel attractive.
Yeah, he seems much more alien attractive than, like, imperfectly. Like, in the sense that the elves in Lord of the Rings were. That weird bone structure.
And I think that maybe is critical, the fact that he finds her irresistibly attractive in a way that he's never found any woman irresistibly attractive. But it's not because of how she looks so much. It's because of her pheromones or something, which I guess isn't that romantic when I say it that way. But it's sort of the idea that, like, even if you're not the most attractive girl you've ever seen, you still might be the most attractive girl to the perfect guy.
Now, this is another poorly framed shot because it wasn't immediately obvious to me that this was pepper spray, and they never identify it as such. So, like, just one close-up of that changing hands with the logo or, like, the word pepper spray on the camera would have made that much clearer. But for all I could tell, he just handed her some green cylinder thing.
Yeah, a lot of people, though, don't like to, like, think it's a little obvious to put all those inserts in, you know? Especially if you think you're an artiste.
Right, which I'm sure was the first consideration when making this movie.
Well, the director was Catherine Hardwicke, who is sort of an artiste. Wait, this is the putting it all together montage.
Is somebody Kaiser Sose?
This is the montage of putting it all together.
Yeah.
Cold one. Oh, she said it out loud in case we... And now it's time for more Googling.
She's gonna get like a bunch of beer.
Wait, those don't look at all like Google results.
Well, you know, Google's updated their layout a little since this movie was filmed.
Yeah, but it's always been, you know, Helvetica, you know, with blue links.
I feel like a lot of horror movies or pseudo horror movies have this sort of like library research, Google research component. They're like, I love The Ring, but there's like a lot of hardcore Googling in The Ring.
You know, Seven had another great library research thing.
But I feel like research was more glamorous to show on film before it was all Google, when it required like going into like, you know, the stacks of some, you know, dank basement and like leafing through these yellowing pages.
Yeah,
that's true.
In fact, there's kind of a suspension disbelief now that people don't figure things out sooner simply because of the wealth of information available on Google.
Right, and the answer is that she's super observant, but the things that she observes seem kind of obvious to anyone who's taking more than a passing interest. So, you know, yeah, I agree that a big plot hole opens up right here.
Yeah. For instance, how long have the Cullens lived in this town, and this one book that's apparently the key to explaining that they're vampires is on the shelf in this one store about 20 miles away?
So maybe this is weird teenage girl behavior that I don't understand, but like, how does like walking past him and kind of giving him the cold shoulder, how is that a signal to follow me?
I don't know that it is. I think he's just been doing that anyway.
Okay, here's the gushing moment.
Yeah, the camera doesn't know what it wants to do in this scene.
It's the, like it's the steady cam shot of disorientation.
Well, sometimes it's approaching them, sometimes it's spinning, sometimes it's... And here we are in this two shot again.
And it was kind of an ugly vignette effect on that, where the corners of the screen were sort of grayed out. It's
that's
a little
weird. That's a weird full shot, right? Because, like, is that a POV or is that, like... And why are we looking at the trees?
Yeah, and why did it sort of dolly in and
yeah, exactly. Why is there a crane on this location?
They paid for a damn crane. They're going to use that shot.
Yeah.
Do they add the prop digitally, you think, or do they actually shoot it outside in the cold? I'm betting digitally. Nobody actually wants to shoot in the freaking cold without a hat on. By the way, I don't like the music. Just throwing that out, that it's sort of just weird goth rock. Oh. Wow, okay. So what do you guys think about this?
This reminds me of Luke carrying Yoda on his back.
And it is also sort of kidnapping.
You found the one sunny spot in all of Washington State.
Here comes the situation.
Girl's best friend.
Now, note this is a very poorly rendered sort of sparkling effect. It's really low res, and I have to wonder if they tried it several different ways and weren't happy with it because they thought, oh, this kind of looks ridiculous. Which
maybe the this it may be the compression of the it may be the compression of the DVD rip that we're watching.
I've seen it a couple different ways, and none of them.
I like her stumbling over that boot, by the way.
By the way, she's so
clumsy. Don't forget.
Hang on, So this line here about him being the world's most dangerous predator—that's and how he's meant to attract people. It's an interesting sort of evolutionary comment. Like, is he the evolutionary predator above humans on the food chain?
Yeah, I think that's the idea.
Well, I mean, that's probably another reason why fundamentalists don't like this series, because of, you know, it's validation of the Darwinian theory of natural selection.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although vampires, it's not a genetic thing, it's a disease.
Well, it could be a disease passed on genetically, like some sort of parasite.
It's like a prion.
Yeah.
It's so romantic.
So they've established how cold he is to the touch. Doesn't that render every time they come into physical contact uncomfortable?
Why is he in a tree now? I really hope it's just like some perfume that she wears.
So I'm going to go...
Like, oh, that's Fergie.
I'm going to cast my lot in with Kristen Stewart. based on this scene as the better of the two actors.
Okay.
Continuity of distance to target.
Now, for all the guff this series gets about the sappiness of the sentiment, that this relationship that we're establishing here does speak very much to that sort of sensitive guy that a lot of women fantasize about. You know, the notion of someone who, you know, has this sort of hidden primal sexuality, but at the same time is too sensitive and caring to unleash it on you willy-nilly.
Yeah, he's both very dangerous and very safe.
Yeah, it's not just the notion of I want you, but I'm so concerned about you that I can't let myself want you.
Just sort of random pan into the trees.
Why are we looking at trees?
It's like when all else fails, just like pan up at the end of this. Oh, this is so cute.
Because it's not as if they do anything that we need to pan away from. It's not like a pan into the fireplace in a love scene.
Here's the thing. I like to believe that, like, at the point when I'm, like, you know, 100 and something years old, I'm going to pretty much be incapable of falling deeply in love with, like, a 16-year-old. Just because it's, like, you know, she'd be like a child to me. You know, she'd be like, we couldn't really have a conversation.
Yeah, well that's... We see a lot of them conversing over the course... Spoiler alert. We see a lot more of them talking in the movie. What do they talk about? Like, what is her fascinating take on the world that he's capable of listening to
for
hours?
He's got like a primal attachment to her. I get that, but like I don't get like how they're actually like a good couple in any meaningful way.
I mean, what do you think they talk about? Do you think she says like, yeah, I read W.H. Auden in class the other day and it was really deep? And he says, oh yeah, I drank with Auden. He was an alcoholic and a drug abuser and kind of a dick. And then
pretty
she
much
says,
writes
oh.
An essay on Ethan Frome just so they could like, you know, go and make out more, or whatever they do. Not make out more.
And it's kind of odd that, you know, she's going through this turmoil and she doesn't have a peer group that she can confide in. She doesn't have friends who she can talk to, like, hey, so there's this guy, and he's really dangerous, but I kind of like him a lot. What should I do?
He's in a band. He writes songs
like
about
a me. Best friend.
Yeah. Which is kind of odd, because the movie, not just the movie, but, like, the setting of the movie has been trying to throw friends at her for the entire first half. And yet it's just resisted all efforts for her to have a peer group. She's literally cut off, well, not literally, sorry, she's figuratively cut off from the entire world except for this weird, creepy Cullen family.
Yeah, she's sort of an outsider by choice.
Yeah.
Oh, the vampire family is not happy.
Yeah. I see what you mean, rather.
My dearest Abigail.
She doesn't need umbrellas anymore, right?
So yeah, Carlisle Cullen, a.k.a. Dr. Cullen, is this fascinating character who apparently, you know, only turns people into vampires if they're on the verge of death.
It's part of his, like Hippocratic Oath.
I suppose. And yet, we see so little of him. He's one of the most interesting characters, and yet, he's just some guy in the background. Creepy.
He's definitely thought about stealing her maxi pads.
Oh.
Ew. Oh.
Oh.
Oh. Blanky.
I hadn't even thought that we would go there, but here we are.
See, I don't like the fact that they could sort of see the future, because it's supposed to be like sort of demystifying, desupernaturalifying the vampires. That it's just like, you know, it's just a disease. It's just like you get bitten and this is what happens to you. But then like the fact that they could see the future sort of brings magic back into the equation. And I guess reading minds too is another thing that like, oh, they are supernatural creatures after all.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I said supernaturalifying.
No, it's fine. But yeah, it does take the evolutionary aspect out of it. So this is the midpoint of the film, and we're only now introducing some of the complicating aspects, like the rivalry between these two, Edward introducing her to her family, and the tension that creates.
Yeah, but it's
very,
like
very lethargically paced.
You know, it's like, but like in Spider-Man, like he didn't put on the costume until an hour in the movie.
Took him 45 minutes to get onto Alcatraz and The Rock.
Because we live in Washington.
You know, I would love to see a TV series with just Bill Black, the guy in the wheelchair, and Chief Sparks, or Chief What's-His-Name, as the stars, as the protagonist, Bella's dad. Just these two, like, you know, he's a small-town sheriff. He's a vampire he's a werewolf in a wheelchair. They fight crime.
Is he, when he turns into a werewolf, is he like a crippled werewolf that needs, like... You know, like, kid, like, has to drag himself around by his...
I don't know if he was ever a werewolf, but he is keeper of the werewolf legends.
Is that, like, a paid position? Does he get, like, a stipend? Whoa, come on.
Wouldn't you if you could?
Like, run around my car at light speed just because I could? I don't know, I probably wouldn't drive. I probably would enjoy running places.
Really? Because I'm sure that gets tiring.
Do you know how much gas costs?
Well, yeah, but I mean, theoretically, Blinky, couldn't you jog to work if you got really good at jogging?
Right, that's a big if. Is this where he lives? It's like, peaceful. I don't know. If I were trying to live like a very secret existence, I might not live in a glass box.
Is this a real food TV personality?
So are vampires all celibate?
No, they're paired off except for Edward.
Is there like a dating website for vampires? That's awkward.
Yeah, this is essentially a family of cannibals living in polite society, and they're having the conversation like, "Oh, hey, can we trust you?"
Well, except that they're cannibals who deign to dine on, you know, bears and deer.
Venison. Yeah. Which is delicious, by the way. She literally knows that because she can see the future.
Right.
She's not just being optimistic or polite.
Mm.
Oh, he's creepy.
Yeah. They're establishing how difficult it is for him to not eat humans. It becomes a plot point in the second movie.
I like to think that if I could see the future, I would not, like, be so smug about it. I still think he can pass as 22. I mean, he probably is 22 in real life.
Yes. And he still doesn't know how to introduce a girl to his bedroom. Like, he's had 100 years of practice, and when he brings a girl home, it's like, yeah, it's my room.
Well, I don't think he brings girls home a lot.
Yeah, true. Yeah, he probably doesn't.
He doesn't really act like he's as old as he's supposed to be.
Yeah. So I guess that's the question. Is he really 117 years old, or has he been frozen at 17 for 100 years? So he's perpetually 17. Like, in that sort of weird hormonal maturity balance.
I'm a vampire. I like girls. They make me feel funny inside. I felt funny inside for 100 years.
Do you want to play Modern Warfare 2 with me?
Can we play 7 minutes in heaven? Except it'll be 70 years in heaven.
And of course he himself cannot go to heaven. Because he is an abomination.
Brr. She should shiver every time he touches her.
Again, like it should be unpleasant for her to be doing this. Because she is touching a corpse.
It would be nice to, though in the book, the point is made that the vampires smell nice. They excrete pheromones or, you know, perfume or something to lure their victims in.
Yeah, he made that point in the screaming exposition scene on the mountaintop. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that supposed to be like a jump, or can he fly?
I think that was supposed to be. Yeah, that's supposed to be a jump, but
okay.
You know, there are very few movies that know how to properly depict
superpowers.
You know, Yeah, superhuman jumps or superhuman running.
Yeah, for example, there he looked impervious to gravity when he jumped from that one to the other.
Well, this movie was fairly low budget. You know, they really wanted to hedge their bets with this one. And the second one, I think they poured a little more into it.
Well, yeah, this is... It wasn't clear until after this movie came out that this was going to be a Harry Potter-esque moneymaker for Summit, though of five films and not of eight, like Harry Potter.
Didn't he, in an earlier scene, say how protective he felt of her? And then he's just taking her up into a massive tree?
Well, do you think a massive tree is an unsafe environment? I mean, doesn't...
For an extremely clumsy girl, the only thing we know about her is that she falls out of things.
You raise an excellent point. You see, wasn't that kind of History Channel-ish?
Oh, so it's diegetic. Is this like the Bella song? Love theme.
Look at the tilt up to him. It's actually him playing this.
Yeah, I gotta say props to Pattinson for learning how to play the piano enough for this bit of the scene.
Maybe he played it anyway.
You really don't like him, do you?
Uh-oh, storm clouds gathering. I wonder if something bad's about to happen.
Well, storm clouds just do that every day of the week there, so it's not... Really, but yes, you're right.
Yeah, but we haven't seen them gather yet.
Do I know this kid?
He doesn't have a Letterman's jacket like me.
That's
Stephanie Meyer, author of...
Was that her?
Yeah, that was her sitting at the counter there.
Yeah, she was just identified as Steffi or Stephanie.
Here's your veggie plate was the thing. Maybe Stephanie Meyer is a vegetarian and Bella is vegetarian like her.
Maybe Stephanie Meyer is also a vampire who doesn't eat humans.
A Mormon vampire.
So is this the same diner from True Blood? Babe to Pam. I remember when I did that to your mother.
He's not much of a dad, really. Like, hey, you're my teenage daughter. You're my teenage daughter. Go hang out with those boys. I'll be in bed early, so you know I'll never notice when you come back, if you come back at all. Yeah, do what you like.
He sounds like the awesomest dad ever.
Yeah, he's a cool dad.
And yet she doesn't appreciate him.
Well, but you know, he's also the chief of police, right? Or like this town's sole police officer. So, you know, if you F with his daughter, or worse yet, F her, you know, he's coming after you.
Yeah, true. I suppose that acts as sufficient deterrent.
I really hope that in a later book, her dad turns out to be like a huge star for like the Seattle Mariners.
Or her stepdad.
Is that, yeah, this is her stepdad.
Yeah.
Do you want to know whether that actually happens or not?
No. Leave something suspenseful. Huh.
Now, this is kind of odd, like her mom insisting on details about this. Again, I think the relationship between Bella and her mom is sort of weirdly... I guess symbiotic in a way. Like, I think her mom encourages her to this sort of over-dramatization and this desire to thrust herself into danger and isolate herself from the rest of society. Because she was the one who in the earlier scene was like, oh, are people being too welcoming? Tell me all about it. And here she's like,
mom,
there's a
cute... Her mom talks almost like her best friend than her mom.
Yeah, which is fun, I guess, but I don't know that that's a healthy relationship necessarily for a mom and a daughter to have. There should be some of that parental distance, I think.
Shh. They're kissing.
Or almost.
He says, don't move. This will only hurt a little.
It's how all good kisses start.
Stay perfectly still.
Yeah. Somebody's going for an MTV Movie Award Best Kiss.
Rather, you're breathing rather heavily into the microphone.
Oh, she's pantsless.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So there's like this interesting gender reversal here that he's always going to be the one who's like, maybe we should just watch Leno.
But yeah, so imagine you're starving and there's this really well-dressed steak on the table. Like Tom Colicchio.
A steak without any pants.
Yeah. Tom Colicchio, perfectly seared, imported Argentinian beef. You know, and you're just supposed to
grass-fed.
Grass-fed, and you're just
she's
supposed
vegetarian.
To get really close to it and savor its smell without cutting off even a little piece for yourself.
I think Kobe would be a great nickname for her. So he does actually want to have sex with her, but he wants to kill her just a little bit more.
Well, he wants to smooch. The issue of sex is not raised really seriously until the fourth book after they're married.
But it's like, yeah. I mean, we are to believe that like his attraction to her is not just like she looks very tasty. It's like she looks like a beautiful woman who would be very tasty as well.
Oh, good. This is a two beer gun cleaning.
That's a good point. It seems like a bad idea to drink while you're cleaning your shotgun.
Yeah. Well. Like
all
I said,
right,
I love her
I
dad so
I got
much.
My gun prepared. Sorry, go on.
No, I love her dad. I want him and Bill Black to have a series.
What would you call it?
I don't know. Striking Sparks?
You could call it the Black Swan, because it's just Chief Swan in black.
Oh, yeah, Chief Swan, yeah. I don't know where Sparks came from. Wow. What a dismissive attitude toward your daughter trying to be adventurous.
So, here we are about an hour and 20 minutes into this movie, and we're actually finally now about to introduce a conflict.
This movie feels a lot more like the pilot for a TV show than a movie. You know, like, I feel like there's not enough plot to make it a movie.
We're meeting all the interesting characters, but we're not really doing anything with them.
So how many vampires are there? Are there enough for two full teams? Or are there ghost runners?
Well, this is like tournament level pool where sort of every hit is a home run, you're about to see. See, that's almost a good simulation of a pitch delivery right there. Ashley Green, the actress playing Edward's sister Alice. That's a pretty good wind up for a pitch. We're about to see it again in a second, but it's not quite convincing.
What's up with this music, by the way?
You called me out. There's eternal enmity between us.
See, I like this scene because it's the first time that it's made being a vampire seem like fun.
See, look, here's the pitch. It's pretty good, but she still has her arm a little weird related to the rest of her body.
You know, whether being a vampire is a blast or really a drag is actually a topic of a lot of vampire stuff recently. Like, True Blood has, you know, the socially responsible vampires and the life is a game vampires.
This would be a great video game, by the way, just vampire baseball.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's the money shot.
Hour 21 minutes, 20 seconds. Here comes a conflict.
It's like, oh, no, they outnumber us by negative 6 people. I like to believe that, like, every time they enter any scene, regardless of whether it's indoors or outdoors, they do so through, like, fog.
See, those are the red eyes of the blood-drinking vampire.
See, now this would have been fun, and yet, well, never mind. But so I guess.
Does the wind change? And there's the wind.
So do all vampires find her irresistible, or just, whoa. But doesn't it seem like these evil vampires, there's just no reason why they would go after her and have to go against, like, you know, 18 vampires that are all, you know, protecting her? But there's a lot of people that are not being protected by vampires that they could eat.
Yeah.
Well. I wonder if the female vampires are, like, irresistibly drawn to, like, hot dudes. Time for some parenting.
This does something interesting, which is make it necessary to deceive the parents for reasons that are obvious to the audience, but that the parents, because the parents are, you know, with dramatic irony, are missing out on a lot of the plot. In other words, parents just don't understand.
You can't just say that I'm being hunted by evil vampires, but the good news is I'm being protected by good vampires.
The idea is that our popular media says, you know, very, very often says the opposite of the DARE program, you know.
What does the DARE program say?
Tell an adult.
Yeah.
You know, telling an adult is the worst idea.
Yeah, that teenagers have this secret battle that they can't let their parents in on.
But I mean, obviously the symbolism is clear that, like, you know, everyone feels like they have a relationship that their parents can't possibly understand, you know, the importance, the significance. She's leaving in the truck that he gave to her.
Isn't that a little dramatic irony? Now, the bad vampire looks a little like Brad Pitt from Legends of the Fall.
You think that's deliberate? You think that's a cult, like, the in the same sense that the Dr. Cullen looks like Noah Wiley, that this is a callback to other cinematic vampires?
I don't know.
Is Legend of the Fall about vampires?
No, but he looked very similar in Interview with the Vampire with, you know, young Brad Pitt with long hair. Except they're all blonde.
Yeah.
So why is the evil vampire trying to eat her, even though there's, like, great risk involved in doing so?
They established that because he likes the hunt.
So, like, he likes the challenge of having to take her away from all the other vampires?
Yeah, certain vampires are trackers. And, like, once they set their sights on you, you know, they will not rest until you're dead, dead, dead.
Now, is that tracker nature, is that something inherent in their vampirism, or is that just a cultural choice? I guess I'm asking you, rather, if you know more about the genre than I do.
Well, it's, you know, the thing is, why he's a tracker.
Mm-hmm.
It's a question of personal preference, really. Like, you know, what are you good at?
So it is a cultural thing. Like, you know,
certain vampires just have a skill for tracking.
Okay.
Yeah, some way that, you know, some people like wine. Some people collect LPs of Miles Davis. Some people are trackers. You gotta have a hobby.
Yeah, these vampires apparently really like cars.
Cars and baseball.
Yeah, I gotta say that for people who never ever eat, they have a really nice kitchen.
Do they ever establish why exactly Rosalie doesn't like Bella as much?
Well, Rosalie is the one who holds on to the perfectly defensible position that this is a colossally bad idea.
Yeah.
And she holds on to it for the longest and kind of has an antipathy towards Bella. And because she's the one in the book described as the prettiest, the sort of beauty queen, one of the vampires. Whereas
okay.
Alice is funky and Esme is sort of mother-ish. But
whereas
kind
I think
of has a natural antipathy towards her as well as sort of a mousy, bookish girl.
Whereas I think in the movie, Ashley Green, the actress who plays Alice, is more attractive than the actress who plays Rosalie. But maybe that
Right?
says more of my taste.
It says about your taste. You like the funky, spunky ones.
Right, you like the Velma.
Do you find yourself going for the obvious lesbian a lot?
Although for the males in the audience or people interested in females, Ashley Green does have a photo shoot in the most recent the 2010 Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. If you're curious, if that's the sort of thing you're into.
You never knew when you tuned into the overview that you were going to get armchair psychoanalysis of ourselves and also subjecting
Tom Paritch's sexuality to a level of scrutiny it probably doesn't deserve.
They dropped the green filter, you know, right away as soon as the car leaves Washington State.
This is, oh, it's chin acting. Look, look at that chin jut. Back in the fastest growing region, the Phoenix Mesa area. You know, honestly, like, Phoenix does look a lot better. Not everything is blue.
So mad.
Not to be a stickler for the laws of physics, but isn't Alice technically seeing the present now?
You see, this is the future bit. That is, because her vision of the future changed, because the future changed, she knows that the present has changed as well. Something just happened.
Still the mirrors.
Oh,
is the tracker going to see a screening of Lady from Shanghai? That's very funny if you see Lady from Shanghai, people. I am so confused. Somebody needs to draw me a diagram of where everyone is now.
Except make you into a vampire.
It's a questionable way of making someone safe.
Shouldn't she, like, try changing her shampoo?
Yeah, couldn't she bathe herself in something that would neutralize her scent?
I think tomato juice helps it.
Do you see what I mean? We're in the last quarter of the movie now, and now it seems like we're in the midst of a plot, you know?
Yeah. Like, this is just now the Act 3, you know, ramp up into tension. And of course, it's convenient how we just established that the ballet school somewhere we'll have to go to 10 seconds earlier.
Ooh, call back to the opening voiceover.
Yeah. You like that book ending?
Well, it's not really book ending. It does something that a lot of film and TV seems to do, which is it takes a scene at kind of at the climactic point, then goes back to the beginning, plays the story all the way through to that climactic point, and then continues to play the story out afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, but like the Aeneid does that. It's en media res, I believe, is the technical term.
Well, actually.
The Odyssey is all about that. It starts with, you know, him on the island and then says, well, here's how I got on the island.
Yeah. But you know what? This isn't quite that, because it doesn't really begin with the scene towards the end. It begins with, like, a piece of unconnected voiceover. It's not like you see her running into a ballet studio and then it cuts back to the past.
On Calypso's island. But, uh-oh, it was all technology.
Does she have a plan, or is she pretty much just, like, wandering into this death trap?
The latter.
I also think that... Did she just get out her pepper spray in the previous scene?
Yeah, we saw her take it out.
And meanwhile, is Edward, like, Googling all the ballet schools in Arizona right now?
Edward doesn't need to Google.
That's dirty. Did everyone just hear that? I'm going to make a little film of our time together. That's creepiness.
See, he's the boyfriend that you don't want.
Yeah.
The creepy dude with the camcorder.
So like, did he just call take two?
See, I really don't like this. The reason he's doing this is not...
And that, you see, she just... She used the pepper spray. The reason he's doing this... Yeah, this is the fallacy of the talking killer, right?
The reason he's doing this, he basically just says, to make it a more interesting movie, he's just like, I want to make it more suspenseful. But she doesn't have any compelling reason not to kill her.
Yeah.
That's creepy. Like, tell him how much it hurts. That you know, and this is a PG-13 movie, maybe? Like,
yeah.
So you can't get away with depicting violence, but that's very difficult psychological.
I mean, like,
violence.
The Lord of the Rings trilogy was PG-13. This is a pretty mild PG-13. I haven't heard any swears yet.
But are you kidding? The blonde guy, the tracker, just maimed her. He just broke her ankle by stepping on it.
Yeah, tortured her.
Yeah, I think that's above and beyond just fighting or hurting someone. That's, you know, deliberate wanton cruelty.
Wanton.
Ow.
She just pulled a shard of glass out of her leg.
So now she's bleeding. Okay, so now she's envenomed, and there's a ticking clock on her. Well, you see, this is a kind of cinematography we haven't had before, right? With the going in and out of focus.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the shield.
Yeah, a little bit, you know. Yeah, there isn't really, this movie doesn't have a style. It has a lot of kind of ad hoc styles, I think, that don't add up to much.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you think the word envenomed about a minute ago?
Yeah. Do you think vampires have their own martial arts styles, hinging on the fact that they're superhumanly strong and fast and don't feel pain the same way we do?
Do you think would be necessary? I mean, like, isn't the point of a martial art to sort of discipline one's kind of natural responses to combat so that they can be more effective?
Yeah, well, I mean, for things like vampire-on-vampire fights or vampire-on-werewolf fights.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I guess so. That was a nice little moment with Alice when she touched the blood and smelled it. When she touched the blood and smelled it and was like, ooh, tasty.
They could call 911.
She's writhing on her back on the ground, screaming in pain from a bloody gash, you know, on her upper thigh.
That an abusive stranger inflicted on her while the man she loves was elsewhere.
Yeah.
How did the Cullens find them again?
Smell tracking? I don't know. Like, they...
You could push him away if you really wanted. You could, like, punch him in the face. That would make him stop, probably.
Well, Dr. Cullen was leaning toward the theory of, you know, no, just turn her into a vampire. That'll save her.
What is this music? What is this montage? I'm sorry.
It's kind of like
you guys are having a wonderful conversation. I don't mean to interrupt it, but we just got really ridiculous.
Oh. It's like the male version of Nina Simone is suddenly coming into this movie.
Meanwhile, in the midst of all this, you know, there are three other vampires tearing apart and burning another vampire in the background here.
That's it's PG-13, so you don't see any of that, you know, close up.
Any of the maiming.
Yes, the MPAA rated this movie PG-13 for some violence and a scene of sensuality.
Have we already seen that scene?
Yeah, I think when they were making it.
I guess that counts as sensuality.
Well, she had her underwear on. I mean, you know, it's always sensuality if you're pantsless. In fact, I think that's the definition of sensuality.
In the MPAA's eyes, yeah.
No, but then if you take the underwear off, then it's sexuality. Sensuality is under the pants, over the panties.
Oh, wait, now they're retconning what happened to her. This is the story the Cullens came up with.
So these are fictional flashbacks?
Yeah. Oh, like you tripped down two flights of stairs and fell through a window.
Thank God Edward had followed you down from Forks. Which is the sort of thing that if you're a vampire and these kinds of, like, maimings are always happening around you, I'll bet you get pretty good at you know, explaining them.
Yeah.
So was her mom never kidnapped?
No, was never kidnapped. They used the video. The bad vampire.
Because her mom was at some, like, minor league training camp in, like, you know, the middle of nowhere, like at Tallahassee.
Yeah, exactly.
Does the nose breathing thing really help? I see that in all these movies, and I feel like, is that making it so much easier to breathe?
The point of that thing, if you want a well actually here, is to give you more oxygen, right? So they're pumping pure oxygen into the nose so that you get a more oxygen-rich mixture into your lungs.
Because she did lose a lot of blood.
more hair than most people. Like, I feel like he has, like, double the hair follicles.
Why do you make me hurt you?
Over the course of this series of four books, how many conversations did they have where he's basically like, we should break up? She's like, shut up.
You know what? The whole second book, actually, is that conversation
They're
writ
like,
large.
We really need to break up. She's like, shut the hell up. Kiss me. Be a man.
Sorry, got cut off. But as I was saying, that's not exactly a healthy reaction for her to be having. That sort of weird, shaking, you know, panic that you can't say that to me. That's borderline abusive.
Some people would call that love. This is an awkward conversation.
Yeah.
Can he drink water? Is he allowed to drink water? Or is that...
He's probably faking it.
Get it? Because she's clumsy. The retconning makes sense because she's clumsy.
Yeah. Now everyone believes she could have tripped down two flights of stairs.
That's at the end of every book. There's like a story like, yeah, you fell out of an airplane and like landed on some power lines and bounced off. And then like landed in a volcano. I remember when I broke your mother's leg. You're a woman now, sweetie.
And once again, here's the Indian kid not allowed to participate in normal white person society.
He can't afford a jacket or a belt because he's so poor.
or to just fake it, because as far as tucking in his shirt goes.
No, well, you know, jackets and belts make you less close to the earth. They use every part of the jacket and belt. Down
there,
dog.
I'm so gonna hire a personal trainer before the sequel.
So Taylor Lautner now is an international sex symbol, though he is not yet of majority age, I think.
Yeah, he's not yet 18.
Just to let you guys know, he's gonna be a national karate champion. I know that is. I used to work on the ESPN show Cheap Seats. We made fun of him back in the day before he was famous, when he was like 12. So it's like Latino themed prom.
Yeah, they alluded to that earlier.
Is that critical, or is that just like for fun?
I don't know. You think they could have tied in something with a little more symbolism relevant to, you know, the whole eternal life, undeath thing? But no, it's casino.
It should be the Enchantment Under the Sea Day.
I was just thinking.
That's the ultimate prom theme.
It's kind of a small prom, but I guess it's a small town, huh?
Yeah.
Better than my prom. My prom is in the cafeteria.
Meanwhile, I thought Vampire... Is this... is this a world where vampires can or can't show up in mirrors? Like, do they have collections?
No, they do. They show up in mirrors.
Okay. I was going to say, otherwise that prom photo is going to be really disappointing.
Yeah. See, I think the prom is supposed to look sort of unappealing. They're sort of like, you know, these guys are too mature and too cool to really want to be a part of high school society. That, like, she's ready to graduate to vampirehood. And I'm like, those are the kids in there, like, you know, dancing away in their cheap tuxedos.
This is awfully high rent decoration for, you know, for a small town prom for like the 40 kids that we saw inside.
Well, I think when Santa died, his will stipulated that all his Christmas lights go to the prom.
Also, didn't we establish earlier that these two are both notionally juniors in high school? So is this the junior prom?
I guess so. Or maybe they, I mean, maybe they have so few kids that they combine the junior and senior prom together.
That makes sense.
Matt, this is the conversation that they have throughout the books, which is the make me a vampire. No, it sucks to be a vampire, but I want to be a vampire for you because I'll, you know, be eternally young.
I'm going to request a spoiler. When she becomes a vampire, is she immediately sorry? And is she like, you're right, this is a hellish existence, and like, I would be better off dead? Or is she like, this is great, why did you keep me from being a vampire all this time?
Well, no, I mean, it's the latter, pretty much.
Yeah, because we haven't seen anything yet that indicates it sucks being a vampire. I mean,
yeah, except that if you fall in love with a human, you know, it takes super vampiric restraint, right?
Yeah, but then you can never satisfy your hunger. It's like basically being a cursed vampire in Pirates of the Caribbean. That like you're plagued by this desire. And taunted by the presence of the thing that you want the most, but you can never have it.
But then you just make that person a vampire.
Let's look at this scene for a second, because she has just said, make me a vampire. He said, okay, you ready? Which seems pretty mean. Right? Okay, I'm going to make you a vampire right now.
No. Psych!
Not!
Again, there are more lights in every shot. They just keep adding some.
Like, I had a fancy prom at my fancy school, right? And, like, it was not as high-rent looking as this.
Yeah, I went to a pretty nice private school, and our prom was in a hotel conference room or a hotel ballroom.
Yeah.
So it had, like, you know, the 70s all-weather carpeting. It had a nice chandelier. The chandelier was really nice. Had a live band. That was cool. But, yeah, it didn't have this.
Eternal life. And pan down to reveal the reflection shot, which signifies nothing really.
Wait,
cool.
No, hold on. We have one last bit here. Oh, foreshadowing. It's
Bryce Dallas Howard.
Or the woman whom Bryce Dallas Howard
proto
replaces.
Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yeah, it's proto Bryce Dallas Howard.
More slow motion.
Yeah, the dips to slow motion have been a little unartfully deployed.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, they got a different director from the second one.
Are they going to do that for the whole credits or?
Yeah. It goes on and on like this.
What do you guys think of end credit sequences that like? You know, give you footage to keep watching, or do you just feel that credits should be just white text, black backgrounds?
Well, I don't understand what the point is. You know, the best use of that, actually, was in the movie Wild Things, right?
Because what was it?
Of the inter-credit scene, right? Because, like, they in the movie Wild Things, they put all the all the crucial scenes in the credits, all the scenes that helped you make sense of the movie, and that that movie's kind of interesting and like exciting series of crosses and double crosses. So yeah. You got the guy's name is Cam. So you got all the good stuff, all the plot twists were made clear only in the credits when everyone is usually walking out of the movie. Now, I thought that was pretty clever, but I think you have to, when you're doing stuff over the credits, like, you have to ask yourself what the point is. Like, there's
The two that jump out at me as they use the end credits really well, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, the end credit sequence is a series of newspaper and magazine headlines showing how Wild Stallions actually brings about world peace.
Right.
And then I think the other one is if you guys saw The Hangover, which yeah. I think it's very, very clever that the last scene in the movie is they discover a camera with pictures taken during the time that they all blacked out. And then they sort of like turn it on, they're like 1, 2, 3, and then it cuts to the end credits. And then you get a montage of these photos throughout the credits of photos that they're presumably watching. So I thought that was sort of a clever use of end credit time.
Yeah, that's another one where like the crucial scene, you know what I mean? The scene at the heart of the movie is withheld from you until the very end.
It's revealed during the end credits. Yeah. It's sort of the thing that everyone's been tiptoeing around for the whole movie.
Well, it's, you know, I mean, Hitchcock wrote about the MacGuffin, and I guess this is stock footage, I guess, right? But like, you know, it's still footage. I'll bet the Twihards were still.
I kind of like this actually. I don't know. It's sort of artsy reflection shot.
You know, the who was it? Hitchcock had the thing about the MacGuffin, which was the, you know, just the plot device that sets the movie in motion. And, you know, that happens in terms of filmmaking as well, that there's a shot, you know, or a sequence that you're missing and that you have to get as an audience member. And the one version I can think of is in Mildred Pierce. You see the murder, but you don't see the reverse shot as who's murdering the millionaire playboy at the beginning of Mildred Pierce. And the whole movie is leading up to revealing that reverse shot. And in Wild Things, it's all the plot twist shots. You know what I mean? That makes sense of the plot. Or in The Hangover, it's the The Hangover is clever because it's a series of still photographs, kind of like the French movie La Jetée, you know, where the idea is that, you know, you sort of break cinema down and it's a series of still photographs. And, you know, so you're looking for this narrative and the narrative is made by a sequence of still photographs that taken together form cinema.
We're probably not doing any favors by talking about much better movies while Twilight credits are rolling in the background.
Sorry.
Yeah. So, okay. And thoughts. I mean, like, what do we think about the movie's massive success? Is it just because it's an interesting gender reversal that she, you know, obviously wants him and he's the one that's sort of pulling back and is sort of like asking her to be patient?
Yeah, exactly. She's saying, you know, penetrate me with your
she's
long,
like, I'm
pointy
totally
things.
Ready.
With your sharp Kowalskis.
This is where it happens. This is where it's supposed to happen on prom night.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, he's like, no way.
It's like I said, it's both things at once. It's that unrestrainable desire that people want, coupled with that sensitive restraint.
Yeah. Yeah, sure, right? Whereas vampires, like if you read the Bram Stoker book, or even today, like True Blood, or The Vampire Diaries, which is now the Kevin Williamson TV show, the guy who made Dawson's Creek, right? There's this idea that vampirism is sort of associated. Oh, well, look, ILM did the visual effects.
That's a little disappointing.
I know, right?
Like, fancy stuff. Like, that was like, you know, they let the interns do it.
Oh, I guess ILM did some of the visual effects. I guess this is something you see at the end of a lot of movies where there will be like a dozen effects houses listed and they're each responsible for like either a different sequence or else a different
shot.
Part of the sequence, you know? Oh, I forget what I I forget what I was saying. Oh, vampirism represents kind of sexual license and kind of living however you want, right?
Yeah.
Like, because you're free from the constraints of death, so what is there to restrain your appetites? And then, like, so there's a conflict then, I guess, within the vampire community in True Blood, in Vampire Diaries, in Interview with the Vampire, I guess, at least at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
As to, you know, like, no, we're going to, you know, live, keep to ourselves and be a friend to the humans. Or, you know, we are superhumans and, you know, they can all kneel before vampires
on. For us, you know. Yeah, the idea is like whether you respect humans or whether you look at them as like, you know, we've moved on beyond them. And they're just ants.
So this is this song is by Paramore, which I guess is the successor to Evanescence for being kind of the goth screamo band.
Yeah, I'm assuming Evanescence just wasn't available at the time.
Well, but Evanescence kind of took a header with the second album.
Yeah, but also I saw a little earlier that there's an Iron and Wine song in the credits, and they were sort of indie darlings for years. Is this them going mainstream?
Well, this movie, it wasn't clear. I mean, you know, we were talking about it a lot, but, like, there's not a ton of money up on this screen.
True.
No. You know? Yeah. They did this one on the cheap and made probably, like, you know, 8 times their budget back.
Although Blood does have a lot of iron in it, and it looks like wine, so maybe that's what they were going for.
Very, very opaque wine. I like when they put the title at the end of the movie because
yeah,
it's
just
like,
because you're like, what was the name of that? I don't like that movie. I'll never remember what it was called.
I enjoyed that film. What was it called?
I almost feel like it should say, thank you for watching Twilight.
Twilight, you'll love, you know, Edward Cullen will return in his next adventure, you know.
For your fangs only. Da-na-da-na!
Die eternally another day.
And, you know, I'm sort of disappointed that there was no after the credit scene, which is very trendy now, that you have like one little shot of like somebody who you thought was dead like coming out of the fire and being like, now I'm pissed.
Well, this was our first overview, and we want to hear what you thought of it. You can email us at editor@overthinkingit.com or email any of the people on this one at rather, Belinky, or Perich, P-E-R-I-C-H, @overthinkingit.com.
And please do, because if you listen this far and you're still listening, then obviously you're our target audience. So clearly we did something right. So please let us know.
Yep.
If anyone wants to work out the physics of how heavy you'd have to be to stop the car, Please do that.
It's not a question of how heavy you'd have to be. It's how much force you can exert with your hand. The limiting factor seems to be the friction of his shoes against the ground, right?
Yeah, or if he's really heavy. I mean, if he weighs like 2 tons, then that changes everything.
But the way that would change anything is by increasing the oh, God, what is it called? Increasing the normal force, right?
All these questions and more debated on overthinkingit.com.
And we'll probably make more of these. So, you know, compliments, criticisms, whatever you have, editor@overthinkingit.com. Until next time, visit us on the web at www.overthinkingit.com, where we subject the popular culture to a level of scrutiny
it probably doesn't deserve.